here to get a good ground. And so what this does is it transforms the voltage from the house, 110 volts, to 50,000 volts. Okay? So the question you need to ask yourselves when I do this is, why don't I die? Okay? So think about that. We'll talk about that later. That's right. Why did not George Matsko die tonight? All right, let's see. Okay? Does wonders for sound systems. Now let me get the tube there. Okay. So I'm going to become a human lightning rod here, and we're going to light up this tube. Okay. You'll notice that the electric fields extend out from the bulb, so you actually see it light up even before I get there. Good. That's how it's lighting up. See that? That's very good.
Still alive.
So hold that thought, okay? We'll get to that. Now one more thing, if we could have the lights, we need the lights for this one, please. Now when you have lightning, anytime you have moving electrons, you have magnetic fields produced. We'd often think about the magnetic fields that are produced by moving electrons with lightning, but it's very important. A single lightning strike of the magnetic field can be sensed hundreds of miles away. Maybe you've seen those maps they have sometimes shows all the lightning strikes. Well, they detect those through the magnetic field, not through the lightning itself. And sometimes you get those electron pulses, electromagnetic pulses, that actually cause power surges and fry your computers at home. And you say, well, I don't understand, you know, why it fried my computer, because it didn't actually hit the wire or hit the wiring of my house or the, you know, down the street or whatever. But that magnetic field is so strong it can cause that surge of electricity in the wires, and that's what fries your computer. So I wanted to show you the magnetic field here. This is a ring launcher. And ladies always ask me, you know, what does the ring launcher do? And I say, it launches rings. And they say, what else does it do? And I says, it doesn't do anything else. And some women don't like that. They don't like the idea that that's all it does. But that's all it does, all right? So we create a magnetic field that has a wire, coil wire, and electrons go this way, and it produces a magnetic field through these rods. And then that magnetic field induces an electric field in this aluminum ring, and that produces an opposite magnetic field going this way. So you have two magnetic fields that oppose each other, and so something has to happen at that point. I put these little magnets here so you can see the magnetic field when it's generated, all right? Because they'll wobble and spin and so forth, so I'll put those there as well. And so let's go ahead and see what happens. So it gets quite high up there. I'm always concerned that I'm going to, get one of the lights up there. And that wouldn't be good. And then it plots out I can plot out the current and the voltage here. Let's do it one more time. Okay. And you can see those electrons are going around there because I can put this coil wire with a light on it. And notice. Okay, you can see it lights it up. Okay. Okay, there's a volunteer. Come on. Okay, hold the ring down. You even know what's going to happen. So hold the ring down. Okay, I'm going to do it about 3 times, all right? You hold it. Don't let it go. Why did you let go? Too hot. So it's very hot. So we talked about how if that energy is not released, it doesn't fly up in the air. It has to go somewhere, according to the first law of thermodynamics. And so it goes into heat. So the the ring gets very hot. And then we don't have to do the magnets.
We're some kids that didn't get to do this today. Yeah. Who does?
Susan.
Susan. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, put it in close to here, right? And don't let anybody scare you by going, you know, like that. You know.
That, over here?
Yeah, that's fine. Any place. You feel it? Here, we'll do it again.
How come you're not jumping? You did it before.
I guess while I got this in my hand, I should show you this. So you can produce an electromagnetic field even with just an aluminum rail like this. And so I can take this, and this is a magnet. I can let it slide down here. Looks how slow it goes. See? So it produces a magnetic field in opposition to the direction of motion, and so it just slides very slowly. So we use that for braking systems, for like city buses and that type of thing. Okay, enough science. Never enough science, okay. All right, so tonight, our text is Exodus 20 and verse 18. Exodus 20 verse 18, this is God is giving the Ten Commandments to the children of Israel out Mount Sinai. And my goal tonight is to impress you with the splendor and majesty of our God. So it says in Exodus 20, verse 18, and all the people saw the thunderings and the lightnings and the noise of the trumpet and the mountain smoking. And when the people saw it, they removed and stood afar off. You know, the few things that strike fear into the heart of a man more than thunder and lightning. Are those fears overblown? I don't think so. When I was a boy, I lived in New Jersey, and we used to pick huckleberries. Anybody know what huckleberries are? You know, a few people know huckleberries. We'd pick huckleberries. We were out in the swamps in southern New Jersey. Lightning storm came up. And it's raining, and I'm up to my ankles in water, running for the car, and I felt the hair on my head go up. And I used to have hair on my head, all right? And that's not what happened to it. It didn't get blown off, okay? The hair on my head went up, and the lightning hit a tree right in front of me, and I felt the current go through my body, which, of course, explains a lot about my personality. But it was an interesting experience. I'll never forget that experience. You know, there was on August 27, 2016, in southern Norway, 323 wild reindeer were struck dead by one bolt of lightning. And if you look at the footage, there's a video of that. You see that all the dead animals' dead bodies lying close together. When those animals get scared, they huddle together, and then the lightning runs along the ground and goes up their hind legs and down their front legs, and because they have a big potential difference between the front and back. And one bolt of lightning killed all those reindeer. And so we're telling the kids today, the best thing to do if you're in a lightning storm is put your feet together so that it's the same potential, and then make yourself as low as possible. Okay, and so I try to give them some pointers on that. Well, how dangerous is lightning to people on the ground? It's estimated for every 600,000 strikes, one person is struck. Ground strikes hit between 500 to 1,000 people in the U.S. every year. However, 70% of people survive those lightning strikes. Now, why is that? Well, if you remember, I had that with the Odin coil, I had 50,000 volts going through my body. And there's plenty of current there, could have stopped my heart. But the electrons are negatively charged, and like charges repel each other. And so the electrons are trying to get as far away from each other as possible. So the electricity actually runs on the outside of my body rather than on the inside of my body. And that's why I could survive that. And that's why so few people are actually killed by lightning. Even though there's a fantastic amount of current there, those electrons are trying to run on the outside of our bodies rather than the inside of our bodies. So that's why lightning is not as dangerous as we might think it would be. It's also pulsating at a high frequency, which also helps explain why it travels on the outside as well. Well, despite that, we see that the children of Israel were wise to back off. I read of a woman who was in charge of a prayer meeting, of a women's convention, and a thunderstorm came up, and she was deathly scared of thunder and lightning. And she was addressing the convention, and when the tempest came up and broke with the din of thunder and the flare of lightning, above the noise of the elements, her voice was heard in shrill supplication, "O Lord, take us under thy protecting wings, for thou knowest that feathers are splendid non-conductors." Oh, that was a good biblical prayer there. Well, is lightning biblical? You bet. And a lot of we find about lightning is in the book of Job. In Job 37 and verse 15, God asked Job this. Now Job 37:15 says, "Dost thou know when God disposed them," that he's talking about controlling the clouds, "and caused the light of his cloud," or the lightning, "to shine?" Now Job didn't know how God made lightning in the clouds, and I'm not certain we really do these days either. But here's our best scientific guess. Every object, from the earth itself to the smallest particle, even the air we breathe, contains positive and negative charges. Now the problem with that is if you're allowed to ask me questions at this point, or after the service, you might ask me, "Well, what is charge?" And the answer is, I don't have any idea. So here's one of the problems with making science into a religion, is the idea that many of the things we talk about all the time with great confidence, we have not the slightest idea what they are. Okay, and charge is one of those. Okay, now if you look up in a dictionary, what will it say charge is? It'll say it's a physical property of a matter that causes it to experience a force when placed in an electromagnetic field. Well, that doesn't tell you anything about what it is. It just tells you what it does. Okay, we don't know what it is. Okay, so that's why science makes a very poor religion. It can't even define the most basic terms that it works with. Well, anyway, for the most common type of lightning, the top of a cloud becomes positively charged as the electrons are stripped away from ice crystals or water droplets by wind currents, falling hail, or rapid change in rising air temperature. No one really knows for sure. As the top becomes positively charged, the electrons move into the lower clouds, which then become negatively charged. And this is an imbalance, and so nature doesn't like this imbalance. And it occurs very rapidly, this potential difference between cloud to cloud or cloud to ground, or cloud to even clear blue sky becomes great enough, sparks fly, which we call lightning, as the negative and positive charges seek to equalize themselves. You know, thunderclouds are not the only source of lightning. It can come from other types of clouds. Well, snowstorms. If you've ever been up north, you sometimes hear thunder snow. I've been in thunder snow, yes. Dust storms, and occasions from the dust and gases of erupting volcanoes, similar to what the children of Israel experienced in our text. Job 37, verse 11. God said, "Also by watering," it says, "he wearieth the thick cloud," that is, he loads the clouds with moisture, God does. "He scattereth his bright cloud," that he scatters his lightning through them. How does he do this? When the cloud is getting ready to discharge lightning, it sends out a leader which can be seen with special high-speed cameras. It's like a channel for the electrons to follow. Now, what opens up that channel? Well, it's actually cosmic rays. Some of these cosmic rays come from beyond our solar system, or even our galaxy, and they're zipping through us right now. and they're charged particles, and they come down. Do you ever notice how lightning has that kind of zigzag nature to it? Well, each of those zigs and zags is the track of a cosmic ray that's come through the atmosphere that opens up a channel for the lightning to flow. And then you get what we call a leader. Each step is another cosmic ray, and then when the leader touches the ground, the electrons are released, and we see a bolt of lightning. Job 38, verse 35. Job is asked, "Canst thou send lightnings that they may go and say unto thee, here we are?" And Job couldn't do that. Job doesn't have the power to do that, but neither do we. We don't have any way of controlling the cosmic rays. Some people have had this idea, well, maybe we could set up, you know, like magnets, and we could direct the lightning in the way we want it to go. But it's just so powerful, and there's just so much, current and so much electric potential there that even our best attempts, we could not control the lightning. Well, can we, with all our modern scientific knowledge, harness the cosmic rays? And we cannot. Of course not. Did you know that a lightning channel is only from about one half to 1 inch thick when it short circuits to the ground? Did you know that the length of cloud to ground lightning channel may be as much as 10 miles long? Now, while we were on this trip, we went to Colorado Springs, and they have Pike's Peak there. And they warn you, they tell you, there's signs there warning you that if there is an electric storm up on the top of Pike's Peak, you could get struck by lightning down where we were at the base. That even though it's not raining, even though the sky is blue and the sun's out, that lightning can strike all the way down to the base of the mountain where we are. And there's signs warning people about that. Did you know lightning travels at 100,000 miles per second? Pretty fast. Did you know that one lightning stroke can have enough energy to lift a one-ton object 62 miles into the air? Did you know that lightning can strike as many as 40 times in the same channel? So this idea that lightning doesn't strike twice in the same place, wrong, okay? Well, this idea about lightning channels is a modern scientific idea. It's really, only within my lifetime we started thinking that way. And yet, in Job 38 and verse 25, the Lord asked, "Who hath divided a way for the lightning of thunder?" He talks about these lightning channels back there in Job, one of the oldest books in the Bible. It says in that Job 38, 25, and then 26, "Who hath divided a way for the lightning of thunder to cause it to rain on the earth?" Well, the skeptics, they scoff at that. They said, well, these ancient people, they thought that lightning causes rain. And we all know, we're all modern scientific people, we know that rain causes lightning, okay, right? But what we find, if you think about it, you look, see clouds up in the sky, and not all the clouds are raining, are they? They're just floating by. And so what happens is you have these little droplets of water in the cloud, and they're too small to be heavy enough to fall as rain. They just float around up there. And so when this electric field builds up in the cloud and you have lightning, it can force those droplets together and cause them to get big enough to fall to the ground. And so here the Bible again is correct. It's scientifically accurate that lightning can cause rain. And we've actually done this in the laboratory. Well, we can't talk about lightning without discussing thunder. What causes thunder? The air around a lightning strike is typically superheated to about 20,000 degrees Celsius, which is about 3 times hotter than the surface of the sun. The air temperature can range between 8,000 and 30,000 degrees Celsius. As the surrounding air is heated, it expands at supersonic speeds, creating a shock wave which rapidly decays into a sound wave within about 3 to 6 feet. So it's that shock wave that causes the sound we hear. Now you know about shock waves. Maybe you've seen somebody with a stock whip or a bull whip, and they sling that thing out, and the end of the whip can go faster than the speed of sound, and you get that cracking sound. That's a shock wave. Or maybe you've heard a sonic boom. That's a shock wave. Well, this is a shock wave as well. You say, why do I hear so many different kinds of things? And sometimes I hear hissing and popping and rumbling and booming and so forth. Well, that all depends on how far away you are, you know, how many streamers there are of lightning, which direction it's going, what the relative humidity is, what the wind speed is, and so forth. So there are a lot of factors that give us all the different sounds that we hear for thunder. Well, here's how the author of Job describes it. Job 37, verses 3 through 5, he says, "He directeth it under the whole heaven," that is, he unleashes his lightning beneath the whole heaven, "and his lightning unto the ends of the earth. After it a voice roareth, he thundereth with the voice of his excellency, and he will not stay them when his voice is heard. God thundereth marvelously with his voice, great things doeth he which we cannot comprehend." Now, of course, thunder is not literally the voice of God, but it's a demonstration of power for which he is responsible. But getting back to lightning, does it have any other purpose? I said this, you know, people ask me, what does this ring launcher do? Does it have any other purpose besides launching rings? Well, no. Does lightning have any other purpose besides showing God's power? And the answer is yes. It helps provide our food. It provides our daily need of the element nitrogen. So nitrogen is the third most abundant element in the human body, and it has to be continually renewed. And we're surrounded by nitrogen. There's 78% of what you're breathing right now is nitrogen. The trouble with what you're breathing is that nitrogen is a diatomic molecule. It's two atoms, and they're attached by a very strong triple bond. And your body cannot make use of that. You breathe it in, you breathe it out, and it doesn't change at all. There has to be a way of being able to break that bond so the nitrogen becomes in a form that you can use it in your body. Well, God has created some plants, we call them legumes, like peas, that can, what we say, fix nitrogen, okay? And they can put useful nitrogen in the soil, okay? But that's not enough. There's not enough legumes to give us all the nitrogen we need. And so that lightning bolt actually has enough power that it can break those nitrogen triple bonds and actually allow those nitrogen atoms to combine with oxygen to form nitrous oxides, and then they can fertilize the soil. Okay? So without the lightning, we would die of starvation. Okay? Now before, you know, the modern era when we use synthetic fertilizers, we estimate about one half of the nitrogen for our dietary needs for the human race came from lightning. Okay? One half. Now, we use synthetic means. There's two German scientists during World War I, and they weren't trying to help people. They were trying to make munitions to try to blow people up. But they learned how to split the molecular nitrogen, and by a process called the Haber-Bosch process. And so we're able to use that process today to make synthetic fertilizers and to feed the world's hungry. And so, but before that time, lightning was such an important part of the food chain. So it had a purpose. That's like God, isn't it? I mean, the hallmark of his creative style is not only does he get the engineering right, you know, does something practical, but he also makes it beautiful at the same time. How often we like to look out and see the lightning and how beautiful the lightning can be. And God makes things both practical and beautiful. Well, did you know that the lightning can also provide evidence for the young age of the earth? How many of you have ever heard of fulgurites? Fulgurite, spelled F-U-L-G-U-R-I-T-E. How many of you have heard of fulgurite? My wife knows. She's heard of it. I wonder how she heard about it. Okay. Well, lightning, when it's intense energy, when it hits the ground, it can melt the soil and form like a glass tube in the ground where the lightning strikes. That is a fulgurite. So I got to tell you this story. This is an artificial fulgurite. I'll do it this way. So think of the lightning hitting right here, okay, and spreading out into the soil. So we were considering going on this trip around the country, and we wanted to get a new car. So he said, well, we're going up to this area. We're going to get some apples. Let's stop by a used car dealer, see if they have any cars. We'd be interested. Never been there before. Never been since. And we looked at their cars. And you know how used car dealers are? They switch you around from one person to another. You go to this guy, and then they send you over to this guy and the sales manager. And you know they try to keep you there as long as possible. So they were asking me, well, what are you going to do with this car? I said, well, we're going to travel. We're going to do these science experiments and so forth. And the guy said, my brother does that. He travels as Dr. Zeus, and he wears a chainmail costume, and he has lightning bolts coming out of his fingers. And he makes artificial fulgurites, these things. And he said, I got one in my office. You know, let me show you to it. He brought it out, and I said, great. And I was telling him about how the fulgurite shows that the Earth is young. And he says, here. He says, I don't have any use for it. And so this is a miracle, folks. I actually got something from a used car dealer for nothing. Okay? This is one of the great miracles of our time. I just wanted you to know that, all right? So that's my full. You can come up and look at it later. I'll put it up here so you can see it. Here's my fulgurite, okay? Yeah, well, I've been talking about fulgurites all summer. That's why I was talking to him about fulgurites. Anyway, let's talk about this. So two geoscientists collected and measured over 250 recent ancient fulgurites from Polk County, Florida. Now, just like you here, on the other side of the Gulf, they experience a lot of lightning strikes every year. From that small sample, they estimated that 45 bolts per second occur around the Earth, and that about a quarter of those occur from cloud to ground. Therefore, by their calculation, up to 10 fulgurites form globally per second. Okay? Well, that sounds maybe a little bit too high. I cut it in half, okay, because sometimes it hits rock or vegetation. It doesn't hit sand necessarily. So I thought, what if only half of the lightning strikes produce fulgurites? And let's suppose that there are only 5 strikes per second instead of 10. Okay, so I cut it way down. And then I multiplied that by the Earth's supposed evolutionary age of 4 billion years. Okay? And then divided by the total land surface of the Earth. And I got an estimate of 4,000 fulgurites per square meter of land. Now, you told me you never heard of these. Okay? And the fact you've never heard of fulgurites is evidence of the young age of the Earth. If the Earth is as old as they say it is, every time you tried to make a garden, you'd be hitting those fulgurites with your shovel. Okay? Everybody in this room would know what a fulgurite is. It's only because the Earth is so young you don't know what fulgurites are. There's an argument from silence for certain, okay? So I spoke about this in another place, and one of the people there, you know, he was unhappy with me. He said, well, you know, that's just a model, and, you know, you can't prove it and all this. I said, well, how many orders of magnitude are there between thousands of years and billions of years? Well, we got at least 6 orders of magnitude. I said, if I'm off by 2 orders of magnitude, I'm still okay. You know, so I know it's a back of the envelope type of calculation, but the fact that fulgurites are so rare is evidence of the young age of the Earth. Well, lightning's used in the Bible to describe the appearance of things that are basically indescribable. Look in Ezekiel chapter 1. I'll give you an example here. Ezekiel chapter 1. So Ezekiel is describing his vision of open heavens and a great cloud blown toward him by the north wind with lightning flashing from it almost continually. He also saw a bright light around this cloud and something like hot glowing metal shining in its midst, evidently God himself. Within the cloud, the prophet saw 4 figures that resembled living beings. They had a human form, but each of them had 4 faces and 4 wings. So Ezekiel gives his description of these living creatures here in Ezekiel 1, verses 13 and 14. As for the likeness of the living creatures, their appearance was like burning coals of fire, like the appearance of lamps. It went up and down among the living creatures, and the fire was bright. And out of the fire went forth lightning, and the living creatures ran and returned as the appearance of a flash of lightning. Now, these living creatures were cherubim. Ezekiel would have been familiar with cherubim. They were actually embroidered on the curtains there in the temple. There were cherubim over the Ark of the Covenant. You know, the Syrians actually had cherubim too in this time. Maybe you've seen pictures of the ISIS fighters. They would capture these areas and they were taking sledgehammers and explosives to these winged bulls. Those winged bulls that you see in the old Assyrian cities and so forth, they were supposed to be representations of cherubim. I don't know what cherubim looked like. You see, Ezekiel's trying to describe what they looked like. Someday we'll see whether he did a very good job or not when we see him for ourselves, and we can gauge the accuracy of his description. But obviously lightning's a big part of it. And then the prophet Daniel had another similar vision while standing on the banks of the Tigris River. In Daniel chapter 10, verses 5 through 6, Daniel says, I lifted up my eyes and looked, and behold, a certain man clothed in linen, whose loins were girded about with fine gold of Uphaz. His body also was like beryl, and his face as the appearance of lightning. His eyes as lamps of fire, and his arms and his feet like in color to polished brass, and the voice of his words like the multitude, voice of a multitude. Now, who does that remind you of? It reminds me of the vision that John had on the Isle of Patmos of Jesus Christ, right? We see the same kind of vision. And I thought about that. I thought, you know, what is it like to die and wake up in heaven, you know, and see Christ face for the first time? And we often go to that song written by Fanny Crosby, and Fanny Crosby was blind. We go to the song written by a blind songwriter to tell us what it's going to be like to wake up in heaven and see Christ for the face for the first time. She says in her song, I Shall Know Him, oh, the soul-thrilling rapture when I view his blessed face, and the luster, she uses the word luster, of his kindly beaming eye. How my full heart will praise him for his mercy, love, and grace that prepare for me a mansion in the sky. Well, luster, you know, luster is actually the word in the King James for the appearance of lightning, okay? In Matthew 28, in verse 3, the appearance of the angel that rolled away the stone from the tomb of Jesus is described like this. His countenance was like lightning, his raiment white as snow. And Jesus on the Mount of Transfiguration is described in Luke 9:29, and as he prayed, the fashion of his countenance was altered, and his raiment was white and glistering. Okay, glistering, that's again an old English word for becoming as bright as a flash of lightning. So I'm thinking, we're going to die, and we're going to get to heaven, and our first look at Jesus is going to be, you know, like this. I mean, he's going to be as bright as lightning. It's going to take a while for our eyes to get used to the radiance of his appearance. Anyway, just a thought, okay? Lightning's also used in the Bible as a symbol of something that takes place very quickly. Remember, it moves at 100,000 miles per second. In Matthew 24:27, Jesus describes his second coming as quick as a flash of lightning. For as the lightning cometh out of the east and shineth even unto the west, so shall also the coming of the Son of Man be. You don't have to worry about missing the second coming, okay? Don't worry about that. You're going to be able to see it. It's going to be really dramatic, like a flash of lightning. Nobody's going to have to point it out to you. Luke 17, verse 24, for as a lightning that lighteneth out of the one part of the heaven shineth unto the other part of the heaven, so shall also the Son of Man be in his day. It's going to be a dramatic occasion when he returns. Now turn with me to Luke chapter 10. Luke chapter 10. And we're going to look at verses 17 and 18. Luke chapter 10. Now let me set the scene for you. Luke chapter 10, Jesus sends out his 70 disciples to go into all the towns Jesus is planning to visit and prepare the people for the coming and preaching of the Messiah. So we pick up the narrative here in verse 17, the 70 return. With joy it says, Lord, even the devils are subject unto us through thy name. And then he said unto them, I beheld Satan as lightning falling from heaven. Now, does that strike you as odd? Okay. So let's say that you're going on your visitation around the church, and you're knocking on doors for the church and trying to, you know, win people to Christ, and you come back and you tell the pastor, "Well, we knocked on this door and the lady was interested, and we gave her a tract, and she prayed to accept Jesus as Savior, and maybe she's going to send her kids to Sunday school or whatever." And the pastor says, "I saw Satan falling as lightning from heaven." Wouldn't that be a strange thing to say? Okay, when that happened, Satan falling as lightning from heaven, that was thousands of years previous to this. What's Jesus saying? He's saying this is a notable defeat for Satan. Okay, it may look like a few dusty disciples walking around Judea, or walking around the Galilee, and doing a, you know, trying to heal a few people and so forth. But you can't see what I can see as a son of God. It's like Satan being defeated the first time around and thrown out of heaven. Now, I grew up in a Christian family, and I went to summer Bible school. Mrs. Evelyn Thompson taught my summer Bible school class when I was 5 or 6, and she had a flannelgraph message about Jesus knocking on the door of our hearts. And she showed the door and the flannelgraph, and there was no handle on the door, so you could open the door. And so she made us understand as children we had to open that door and let Jesus into our hearts ourselves. Okay, you probably heard that lesson. And so she said, "Who wants to raise their hand and ask Jesus to come into your heart?" And I raised my hand. And then I remember I ran down the hall. My mother was a teacher in another class. And I said, "Mommy, Mommy, I asked Jesus to come into my heart." And she said, "That's nice. Let's go eat lunch." But if Jesus had been there, he would have said, "I saw Satan falling as lightning from heaven." You see, we don't know what's going on in the hearts of these children. And we just, you know, we just sort of brush it off a lot of time. But if we had real spiritual vision, like our Savior, you'd understand the notable victory and the notable defeat that Satan has suffered whenever one of these young ones comes to him. So those of you working with the children here, you know, my hat's off to you. My hair's off to you, too, but my hat's off to you. Okay, so what should our response be to God's lightning and thunder? Captain Alan Bean, U.S. Navy, Apollo astronaut, he wrote this account. Test pilots have a litmus test for evaluating problems. When something goes wrong, they ask, "Is this thing still flying?" If the answer is yes, there's no immediate danger, no need to overreact. When Apollo 12 took off, the spacecraft was hit by lightning. The entire console began to glow with orange and red trouble lights. There was a temptation to do something, but the pilots asked themselves, "Is this thing still flying in the right direction?" The answer was yes, it was headed for the moon. They let the lights glow as they addressed the individual problems and watched the orange and red lights blink out one by one. That's something to think about in any pressure situation. If your thing's still flying, think first and then act. You know, the same principle applies to our lives. When a bolt from the blue strikes, whether figuratively or actually, that's a good time to take account of your life. Look over one verse here, 2 Corinthians 13:5. Pastor referred to it the other day. 2 Corinthians 13, verse 5. Paul says, "Examine yourselves, whether you be in the faith. Prove your own selves. Know ye not your own selves how that Jesus Christ is in you, except you be reprobates." That's 2 Corinthians 13:5. So Paul is going to come. He's going to judge the Corinthians. But he told them to examine themselves, to make sure everyone was walking in the faith. He believed that they were. Testing themselves would preclude him having to discipline them. Paul believed that Jesus Christ was working in each one of them unless they failed this test. In that case, if there was some doubt whether they're walking in the faith, okay, he's not talking about assurance of salvation here. He's talking about the idea of the fact that we should be able to see a direction in our lives. In other words, sometimes, I'll give you an example. I had a secretary, and her husband died young. She was left to raise two children on her own. And then she got lupus, and then she got cancer, and she was very low. I can remember she coming into the office, and she was doubting her salvation, whether she was ever saved. And what this verse is telling us, we should be able to look at the course of our lives at times like that and say, yes, we're heading in the right direction. You see, it's an assurance to us that we're headed the right way, even though emotionally we're depressed and we feel down. We can look at the course of our lives and say, yes, this thing is still flying. You know, it was said that a young Martin Luther was walking outside on a steamy July evening in 1505 when a lightning bolt hit so close it knocked him over. At that moment, seized with terror, he vowed to become a monk. He quit his legal studies and checked into a monastery. Martin Luther, even though still unregenerated at this point in his life, was convinced that God was for real. In fact, the Bible says that once any man has seen the magnificence, the intricacies, the beauties of what's been created that we've been talking about the last couple nights, we have no excuse for not knowing that God exists. And if God is for real, we should be very interested in what he has to say about where we are now and where we are going. Quote one verse to you in closing. Romans 1:20, for the invisible things of him from the creation of the world are clearly seen, being understood by the things that are made, even his eternal power and Godhead, so they are without excuse. What questions do you have tonight? Yes, ma'am. Yes. That's right. Yes. 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 Lightning has so much power, you know, so many electrons, you know, that some of those electrons are forced to the inside. But there's forces pushing them to the outside. That's usually why you see, like you'll hear people get hit by lightning and it burns all their clothes off. And they're standing there naked in the rainstorm. Have you heard stories like that? It's because the power of the lightning is going to the outside of the body as much as possible. So people are killed, and those reindeer were killed. The problem with the reindeer is they have a different, bigger difference in potential between their back hooves and their front hooves. That's why in a lightning storm, you don't want to stand with your legs like this or lay down on the ground like they told my wife to do when she was a kid, lay down on the ground. You don't want to do that. So again, the lightning's going to try to get away from itself. It's going to try to expand, and that's what saves people's lives. Yes, sir. Yeah. 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 So the crane acted like a lightning rod. It was grounded, and so you're making a complete circuit, like I was making a complete circuit with my wife with that little tube. Okay, so it completed the circuit, so that's why the lightning struck. Yes, ma'am. Yep. Yep. Listen. Yeah, I don't know. I had a great uncle killed by lightning, and he was just standing in the window. looking at it, and a lightning bolt hit him in the window. So I guess you could say God knew that it was time was to go home. I don't know what else to say. Yes. Right. That's right, because we have electrical systems in our body that make our heart beat and so forth. So yeah, that's a good point. Thank you for pointing that out. Yes, ma'am. I'm not sure that's true. So the question is why there are more lightning bolts in Houston than anywhere else. So as far as my research is concerned, Tampa, Florida is the lightning capital of the high humidity. What your husband said the other day, you know, so you have a lot of thunderstorms, a lot of humidity, close to the Gulf of Mexico. But they are too, you know, they're on the other side of the Gulf. So my research said that, maybe I'm wrong, maybe I'm ignorant about Texas, but my research said that Tampa, Florida is the lightning capital of the world. But I've now been in I think three places on our trip where they all said they had more lightning than everybody else. So when we were down at the border, the people on the Rio Grande Valley, they say they have more lightning than anywhere else. So I don't know. Yes. Yeah. That's right. So it's pushing up all those dust, all the dust and the pumice goes up and they rub together and the electrons get rubbed off. And that's what causes the lightning in the volcanoes. Yes? You mean as far as being in a car? Not as much as you would think. So what really protects you in the car is the metal around you. It acts like, the kids will know, we talked about Michael Faraday today, we call it a Faraday cage. And so the lightning, again, runs on the outside of the car and protects you. Our modern tires are often steel belted, as they actually conduct electricity pretty well. So I wouldn't depend on that. As far as your boots are concerned, they're probably not thick enough to really, you know, make a difference as far as the lightning is concerned. But it probably has a little bit, you're probably a little bit safer than running around in your bare feet. Okay, as far as that's concerned. Yes, yeah. The God's will. That wouldn't help. No, that wouldn't help. Steel-toed boats won't help. Okay, any other questions? We'll turn back to the pastor here. So tomorrow night we're talking about global warming. And so that's a topic that's interesting to you. You might hear from a little different angle than you've heard about it before. I'm going to try to do it from a biblical angle rather than from a political angle. Okay? And so I hope you'll come back and hear that. And saw some of you looking at the literature on the table back there. Feel free to take whatever literature you'd like from Bob Jones University. That's what it's there for. So, Pastor,